Around 200 people who arrived in Australia for last month's Commonwealth Games on the Gold Coast have since applied for protection visas. A further 50 have yet to apply and remain in Australia illegally. The figures were revealed at Senate estimates in Parliament today. Sarah Dale is the Principal Solicitor at Refugee Advice and Casework Service and is representing some of those who've applied for protection. Sarah, thank you for your time tonight.
Thank you so much for letting me join you.
So which nations are the 200 or so people from?
Certainly our experiences at RACS has been what's been largely reported, which is people from African nations, Sierra Leone, Cameroon, various different countries have been involved.
Okay. Do you know if they're all athletes or are they support staff? What's the mix?
It's certainly our experience that it's a mix of athletes and other personnel that have all been here in various roles for the Games.
So when I heard the number coming out of Senate estimates that there were, 250 people, 205 that have officially applied, I was actually quite staggered. I knew that after all games this happens, but this seems like a large number. Is it a particularly large number?
Certainly for us, we weren't that surprised for the number of people that sought our assistance and certainly the number of people that have sought protection here in Australia. There are largely 10,000 odd applications every year that people make to seek protection here in Australia. So this is but a small number of the many thousands that access their rights.
Will the fact they overstayed their initial visa granted for the Commonwealth Games affect their chances of being granted protection?
So for those that lodged before the expiry of their visa, they're not considered overstayers. They had a right to make that application and they did so before their visa expired. Even for those 50 that haven't yet made an application, if they wish to make an application, they're well within their rights to do so. And further, it's been reported that there are nearly 65,000 people that overstayed in Australia last year. So 50 out of 64,000, we're really looking at really small numbers.
What's going to happen to the other 50 who have overstayed their visa and they haven't sought protection? Can they still apply?
So those that haven't sought protection still are within their rights to make that application. However, they are now considered unlawful non-citizens, which means that it is in the department's powers to detain them if they want to do so. But certainly there's nothing preventing them from making that application if they want to.
And do we know the gender breakup?
I couldn't give you that from RACS experience, and I'm not sure that that's been reported in the media, so I'm not sure myself.
So could any of the 250 or so we're talking about end up in detention while their visas are being processed?
Certainly, if you make an application before your current visa expires, it's practice that you would be given a bridging visa that allows you to remain in the community until that decision is made. It's only when you become unlawful that you are susceptible to being re-detained.
Last week, we spoke with a refugee advocate, David Mann, who is also representing some of those who've applied for protection. He indicated that applications were being prioritised or fast-tracked because they're athletes. Here he is.
It does appear that people are being fast-tracked, that their claims are being looked at very quickly. And that's actually in and of itself not a bad thing at all, because what we see more broadly is that for so many of the people, we act for thousands of people, and so many of them, it takes sometimes up to 2 years to even get an interview about their case after they've applied.
Have the people you're representing had their applications fast-tracked?
So people that we're assisting, we have seen that they have been given interviews much quicker than others who apply on shore have. We have seen that process has moved more quickly than is the experience of those who apply on shore.
And what visas have they applied for? Is there a range?
So if you're applying for protection in Australia and you arrived by plane and you hold a visa, then you're eligible for what's called an 866. That's a permanent protection visa, a visa that allows you to remain in Australia. And that's the only visa that can be granted for people seeking protection that arrive by plane.
And on what grounds would these claims be made on?
So what people will need to do is put in claims demonstrating that they fear persecution in their home country, and they need to demonstrate that they do so for one of five reasons, be that race, religion, nationality, because they belong to a particular social group, or because they have or they're imputed with a political opinion. It's really high bar here in Australia. We have our own domestic legislation that defines who Australia will protect.
So, I mean, obviously it's all very early and this is just all emerging, but what is your assessment of the likelihood of these 205 people being granted refugee status in Australia and being able to continue to live here?
Certainly we're not going to know that until the processing continues and that processing comes to an end. It's our experience that, of course, there will be people in there that are owed protection. And we've heard lots of examples in the media recently, such as people who fear harm based on identifying as homosexual. In a number of Commonwealth countries, it is criminalised to be homosexual. So it's certainly our experience that we will see some people who are granted protection. But as for the overall figures, we're not going to know that until the end of processing.
What kind of support will these people get while they're waiting for the decision? Are they eligible for any kind of welfare? Because there's been a range of announcements around welfare and refugees over the last few years.
Yeah, as we've seen in those announcements, you really need to demonstrate quite a high level of vulnerability before the government will step in and assist you. What's really been really critical at this point of time is that legal advice and legal assistance has not been funded by the government. So people have had to access services such as RACS, who have assisted people with no government funding for these applications to be made. So people are really struggling. They really do need that support. And it's really lucky that services like RACS and Refugee Legal, who you heard from, David Mann, are out there to assist.
I asked David Mann this question too because I just think it's an interesting question in relation to the fast tracking. What do you make of that? Because, you know, in fact, I just spoke to Jed Carney about, you know, refugees or asylum seekers languishing on an offshore detention centres, and then we have these fast track cases here so fresh out of the Commonwealth Games. Is that just the way the system works? What's your analysis of what seems like a, you know, discrepancy in the process?
Certainly, there are motivations that we aren't privy to, that we won't know why some cases are highlighted for processing quicker than others. But it is our preference that claims are assessed efficiently and fairly. Just so long as people have the right to have their cases fairly assessed, we're happy if processing is going to move efficiently. Certainly, what we've seen in the what's known as the legacy caseload, or people that arrived in Australia by boat, is that limbo has a really long term effect on people. So any steps that the department are making to make sure that processing is fair and efficient is good for us, so long as they can access their full suite of rights in doing so.
Sarah, thank you so much for coming on and explaining what is a pretty complex story. Thanks so much.
My pleasure, anytime. Thank you.
Sarah Dale is the Principal Solicitor at the Refugee Advice and Casework Service. This is RN Drive.